From the Moan Broadcast Center, this is Air Talk. Good morning, I'm Larry Mantle. We welcome you to an abbreviated Air Talk today, just as soon as the Judiciary Committee reconvenes after their votes on the House floor. We'll bring you back to NPR for the continuing live coverage of the debate surrounding the passage of the articles of impeachment out of the committee to the full House of Representatives, where it's expected next week they will be holding their debate as well as their vote on the impeachment of President Trump. Two articles of impeachment that the Judiciary Committee is putting forward and are expected to pass out of the committee today. The Democratic majority alleging that President Trump obstructed Congress by refusing to cooperate in the impeachment hearings by allowing members of his current or past administration to speak and also not providing documents requested by the committee. Also, the allegation that he abused the power of his office, this around the allegation that the president engaged in a quid pro quo with the president of Ukraine over the release of $400 million in defense funding in exchange for announcing an investigation into the Bidens and the Burisma natural gas company in Ukraine. We're going to be bringing you this coverage just however long the committee is out to do those votes on the floor of the full House. We begin with Anna Edgerton, politics editor for Bloomberg. Anna, thank you for joining us. What has most stood out to you so far this morning, as well as last night's beginning of this markup session?
Well, so far, Republicans on the Judiciary Committee have really tried to focus in on this first article of impeachment regarding abuse of power. They've offered two amendments so far. The first was from Jim Jordan of Ohio, and he sought to strike that amendment from the impeachment resolution. The second one was from Matt Gaetz, a Florida Republican, and he suggested changing the resolution to say, instead of investigating Joe Biden, that the president sought to investigate Hunter Biden, the former vice president's son, and his alleged role on the board of Burisma Holdings, the Ukrainian gas company.
And to this point, we have had much of the same, many of the same points that have been reiterated. What are the members of the committee seeing as their responsibility at this point? Are there the creation of sound bites they can use in future campaigns? What do they see as being accomplished for their own political good?
Well, that's absolutely right. We have seen many of the same points made today that have been made in previous hearings. But it seems like Republicans are offering a vigorous defense of President Trump and, you know, in some cases speaking to him, saying, you know, trying to, I don't want to say perform for an audience of one, but, you know, they know that the president is watching this. And we did see a tweet from President Trump earlier commenting on two of the statements from Democrats. So we do know that he is either watching it or has been briefed on it. Democrats, on the other hand, are defending the process, especially when it comes to the witnesses that Republicans were allowed to call, and really pointing out that this is a somber, sober process that has been conducted as the Constitution and as committee rules would indicate that it should be.
Anna, can you preview what's expected to come once the members of the committee come back from this vote break?
So they already voted on the Jordan Amendment, and that was predictably defeated by the Democratic majority. They still need to vote on the Matt Gaetz Amendment, and they'll probably do that shortly. They've been debating it for a while now. Republicans could offer additional amendments. How many they offer just depends on how long they want to drag out the process. It could wrap up by mid-afternoon. It could drag into the night, wee hours of the morning, even into tomorrow.
Wow. And in the debate around the articles of impeachment themselves, does that start after all the amendment debate is finished?
Yes. So after the committee finishes debating these amendments, they will vote on the articles of impeachment. The debate regarding amendments is the debate on the actual
articles.
It's
the same thing. Okay.
Yeah, it's all part of the same process. And then, you know, we will be looking forward to that vote, predict that this resolution will be adopted by the committee, and then head to the full House floor for a vote.
Then what is it that's expected to take so long, just debating that Second Amendment?
If you want to drag out a committee process, you can. There are a lot of things that members can do to introduce points of order, to raise objections, to raise amendments to the amendments. So there are procedural ways for Republicans to drag this out for a very long time. They can ask for roll call votes on every, you know, motion to table that's presented. So it's really just kind of a procedural slog if Republicans want it to be. And, you know, it depends on how long they want to keep this in the limelight and keep this process going and kind of use this time to be making their political point.
Well, and I also wonder, is there a hope that the vote itself, the formal vote to pass this to the full House, takes place after everyone's gone to bed?
It's possible. I mean, we're hoping it'll happen like mid to late afternoon, but we have staggered our shifts here in the Bloomberg newsroom so that we will be staffed into the night if need be.
And I'm going to let you go, but just anything quickly to add that you've learned over these preceding hours important for our listeners to know?
The thing to be looking for is how the president will conduct his defense in the Senate trial. He did have the option to participate in the judiciary hearing, either sending his legal counsel or even himself appearing to present his defense. The White House has chosen not to do that, so the Senate trial could be the first time that we actually hear the president's point of view from the White House, not just through Republicans who have been defending him on his behalf.
Anna Edgerton, politics editor for Bloomberg, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Also joining us, UC Berkeley professor of law, John Yoo. He was deputy assistant attorney general in the Justice Department during the administration of President George W. Bush. Professor Yoo, good to have you with us again. First, your thoughts about the shift in messaging among the Republicans on the committee, moving from their complaints about the process itself, not being able to call their witnesses, not having a day devoted to their case-making, shifting that into the defense of the president's conduct directly.
Well, Larry, it's great to be back. And I got to say, I think this is something the founders, when they wrote the impeachment clauses, would be unhappy to see. Because as you say, you're seeing Democrats sort of holding together on one side, Republicans holding together on another side, and you're going to see what looks like a party line vote. As you point out with the reporter just now, you saw party line votes on rejecting Jordan Amendment. You're probably going to see another one on the Gates Amendment. And as we know from the founding, what they did not want was for impeachment to be a partisan tool where one political party or another political party was using it to try to control a president. And I'm afraid that's what we're going to see. And so, you know, when it comes to Republicans shifting, you know, they've lost on process. They know that that's all done. They're never going to get a chance to put on witnesses, never get a chance to cross-examine anybody. And so they've got to move to the substance. What bothers me is how fast this is all taking. And this is the most important thing that the House does. It's its most important, gravest constitutional responsibilities to decide whether to remove a sitting president. And we're essentially talking about 2 days of debates in the House Judiciary Committee.
And yet we're hearing the same arguments made time and time again. If you were to extend this days or weeks longer, what more would be debated substantively about this?
Well, I think, as we talked about last time, I think the big missing hole is in the facts. We still haven't heard any testimony from anyone, other than maybe Ambassador Sondland, and that's disputed, from anyone who really talked to the president about Ukraine, about John Bolton, National Security Advisor, Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State. Now, people say the White House is dragging this out, and they are, but they have every right to raise these kinds of privileges and defenses, and then that would get worked out. I don't think the framers would have thought that we would have this kind of rush to judgment based on a political calendar, not the calendar of how long does it take to really thoroughly investigate this. And then there's, I think, a really important legal question, which is, even if everything the Democrats say is true, is this a serious enough abuse of power on the level of treason and bribery that would justify removing a president during an election?
Would it be better, though, strategically, for Republicans to cede that the president was way out of line, that when he made this, and it wasn't just the one time in the phone call, but at least we've had testimony that on multiple occasions he talked about the importance of the announcement of this investigation into corruption or the Bidens or Burisma. For Republicans to say, look, we're not defending this conduct. This was clearly, you know, he was looking selfishly at his own interests. Nonetheless, we don't think this rises to the level of impeachment because of other, you know, money being released or whatever thing. Would that not be more straight than presenting it as though what the president did, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it?
Larry, I agree with you. I've got a piece in the Financial Times coming out today that makes that exact argument. You're reading my mind. So I think that you're exactly right. Take all the facts as true. I actually think that the president did ask for a favor and that the president did delay foreign aid, although we need to get more facts on that. But even if that's true, the real question, and that's where you would want more debate in the House Judiciary Committee on the floor of the House, is that actually enough to remove a president? You know, you had a lot of Democrats who were president for the Clinton administration, Clinton impeachment, who made a similar argument about Clinton. So he lied. Is this really important enough to undo the 1996 election? I think it's the same question you have here. But I'm afraid what's going on is Republicans in the House aren't making that claim. They're not making that argument because their base doesn't want to. Their base is so upset about what's being done here to President Trump that they're not giving their members the sort of constitutional flexibility to make what I think is your, was you identify, a very reasonable defense.
We appreciate it, Professor Yu. Pleasure to talk with you. I'm sure we'll be speaking with you again as we follow along with this going to the full House of Representatives. That's the expectation after the formal vote today or early tomorrow. We'll see then what comes before the full House of Representatives. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Larry.
John Yu, UC Berkeley, professor of law, with us on Air Talk. Also with us, Michael Isikoff, the chief investigative correspondent with Yahoo News, and he covered the Clinton impeachment process to such a degree of depth that he authored Uncovering Clinton about it. Michael Isikoff, good to have you with us again on Air Talk.
Hey, good to be with you.
Just a reminder to listeners, we will be rejoining the House Judiciary Committee markup session of the impeachment hearings just as soon as the members come back from their votes on measures before the full House of Representatives. So, Michael, let's talk about what's happened this morning. Anything stand out to you as notable or as much of this rehash of earlier?
Yeah, I mean, look, we have kind of been hashing out the evidence and rehashing it on the Ukraine matter for, you know, what, the last 2 months now. So it's really hard to hear something new in the debate over what happened here. I think the facts are pretty clear. The arguments have been pretty well established. So, I mean, this is an historic moment because the committee is going to vote today to forward articles of impeachment to the full House, and the House is going to vote next week. I can't imagine that anybody who's actually tuning in is going to change their mind about anything that they're hearing today.
Can you give us a bit of a preview of what, assuming that it is voted out of the committee, what next week would look like if that's when hearings are held before the full House?
Well, look, it's not going to be a hearing. It'll be
the vote, I should say. Yeah.
You know, a full debate and vote. I think the one wild card out there, which I'm looking for, is how many Democratic defections could there be? Remember, there were two Democrats who voted against initiating the impeachment inquiry. But there is rumblings that a number of others who, in particularly in those moderate districts, Trump-friendly districts, who did vote for the inquiry are getting nervous. They're looking at the polls like everybody else, and the polls are not particularly helpful to the Democrats on this, certainly in terms of a national consensus to move forward with impeachment. And if you're in a Trump-friendly district and you're facing a tough reelection battle, that makes this vote really uncomfortable. So how many could there be? there's some talk it could be as few as five, which would probably be manageable. But I think if it gets north of that, that's going to be problematic. It's not going to change the outcome. Nancy Pelosi's got the votes. Donald Trump is going to be impeached. But and it's almost certain that there will be no Republicans who vote for it. So this will be a purely partisan vote to impeach him, and there may be some bipartisan ship to the votes against impeaching him.
What do you think is going on with unaffiliated voters? We understand why Republican voters are standing by the president and the process itself they find offensive at what Democrats are doing. We obviously understand where Democrats stand on President Trump and the view that he's unfit to continue as president. But for the sort of lack of movement among unaffiliated voters towards supporting impeachment, what do you think is going on there that is making people reluctant to go with the Democratic narrative that the president should be removed?
Well, look, just remember what Democrats like Jerry Nadler were saying 20 years ago when Bill Clinton was being impeached, and what Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff were saying as early as this year before the Ukraine matter broke, and that is that, you know, it is to have a purely partisan impeachment with no overwhelming national consensus is problematic. It's a divisive act by its nature to impeach a president. It divides the country. It inflames passions. And as you get closer to an election, the argument, that shouldn't we just let the voters decide, does have traction. And I think that, as much as anything, accounts for the fact that we've really seen no movement in the polls since September, when the transcript of the president's call with Zelensky came out. None of that means that voters are just shrugging off Trump's conduct. I think when the pollsters ask, is there a do you approve of what the president did? Did you think it was wrong for him to ask for these investigations of the president of Ukraine, something that purely only benefited the president Trump, that is, the numbers are pretty striking. Well over 50%, 55, 58, 60% of the public disapproves of what Trump did. It's when you get to the next sort of follow-up question, do you think it rises to the level of removing him from office? And implicit in that is during an election year, I think that's when it that's when the numbers start to go down a bit. And also, I do think it was pretty striking that when you look at these two articles that the Democrats have put forward here, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress, they don't accuse the president of committing a crime, which is very different than the experience under Richard Nixon and Bill Clinton. The impeachments voted by the House Judiciary in both of those involved allegations of criminal misconduct. And I think the obstruction of Congress is a bit amorphous. The president clearly took some unprecedented sweeping claims of privilege to prevent key witnesses from testifying before the Intelligence Committee and turning over documents. But the Democrats didn't go through the motions of taking the president to court and getting a court ruling that those invocations of privilege were invalid. So I think that weakens. It's not obstruction of justice. Obstruction of justice is obstructing a criminal investigation, which he arguably did do in the Mueller probe, but not in this case.
We're talking with Yahoo News chief investigative correspondent Michael Isikoff, covered the Clinton impeachment process and authored Uncovering Clinton. One thing that's very reminiscent of the Clinton impeachment, because I was on the air during all that time talking with our listeners, and you know, very similarly, just anecdotally, I don't know whether this show up in polls or not, but Michael, I hear from people both who you know strongly believe President Trump should be impeached, and also talked with people who are dead set against the process and believe the president's being railroaded. And both of them, I hear so much negative statements about how the representatives have conducted themselves in this process. And that was my recollection with the Clinton impeachment, too, that it really drove down people's view, as if it could go a lot lower, of Congress.
Yeah, look, because as I mentioned before, this is a process that inflames passion. So it gets people angry. There is, you know, from the perspective of Trump voters, I did think that Jim Jordan's comments last night about they don't like us. They, the Democrats who are pushing this, don't like us in flyover country who voted for President Trump. Putting this on in sort of a cultural lens of you know them versus us, I don't think that explains at all why impeachment is going on here, but and why the Democrats are pushing it. But I think it does have some traction. That's an argument that
a lot of heads were nodding.
With a lot of people.
Yeah, a lot of heads were nodding among Republicans as he was saying that, no doubt. Michael Isikoff, good to talk with you as always. We appreciate it, and I hope we'll have a chance to speak with you in the days to come.
Anytime.
Thank you. Michael Isikoff, Yahoo News, chief investigative correspondent. We're going to continue during an abbreviated air talk until the House Judiciary Committee resumes its markup session, in which it's debating a pair of amendments to the articles of impeachment that are expected to be voted on later today, although we heard it could even be as late as early into tomorrow morning. So we'll see what happens with that. It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. We have many more guests lined up. We'll talk with them in 1 minute. You're listening to an abbreviated Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. We came your way right after the break of the House Judiciary Committee. Today is the day in which the committee's expected to vote on the articles of impeachment against President Trump, sending it to the full House of Representatives, where it's expected next week they will debate on those articles and vote on the impeachment of the president. Should the House impeach as expected, it then goes to the Senate, where a trial is held. The terms of that trial still being worked out by Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, and other Republicans, along with conversations with the White House staff, how that's going to be conducted, presumably in the month of January. We will rejoin NPR's live coverage of the Senate Judiciary Committee's markup of the articles of impeachment just as soon as they come back from a break. They're taking some votes on the House floor and probably grabbing something to eat as well. With me is Sean Walsh, Republican political analyst. Sean, good to have you with us. Your thoughts about a bit of the change in the arguments made by the Republicans this morning.
Well, first thing, I want to do a shout out to your production staff and you. I think John Yoo and Michael Isikoff did a phenomenal job for your listeners to lay out exactly what's going on as the state of play. With regards to today and the actions in the committee, particularly by Mr. Jordan, it's right out of the Republican playbook. The playbook is to continue to muddy the waters, say this is not a legitimate process, and to make sure that people know that the country is deeply divided and the Republicans don't support this issue. I think you're going to see a similar drill on the second article of impeachment. And I think that between that and the fact that you had the Horowitz hearings, where a lot of Republicans feel that the FBI acted very politically even though they didn't come to a conclusion that there was political bias. They saw what happened, and now that Speaker Pelosi is moving forward with NAFTA Junior and also with prescription drugs, I think that's signaling to the rest of the country that, you know, this is going to take its course, but there's nothing that's really going to change, and the president's going to be acquitted in the Senate.
What's your sense about how Americans are responding to the process, and do you think that partisans on both sides are disturbed by the tone of the rhetoric in the course of the hearings?
Well, I think they are, but it's going to happen no matter what. So this is not President Nixon, where there was an actual crime, and I think maybe we were a little bit more innocent politically or in an innocent time where Republicans were outraged. He would have been impeached, and he would have been convicted, and he would have been removed from office. I think the Clinton impeachment process jaded the public a little bit, and this current impeachment process is jading the public a little bit. There will be some blowback on some members. But I honestly think, and this may offend some of your listeners here, but I think that the politicians in Congress want to get this thing through somewhat as quickly as possible and then move on to the elections. Now, don't get me wrong. This is an acid wash to the president. I mean, I think this hurts him significantly going into the election process. So whereas he may not be removed through the impeachment process, I think that this actually hurts him pretty badly for his reelection.
You do. And you think because the formality of the process or the allegations raised, how does being impeached cut into the support he would otherwise get?
Well, I think partly this whole process leads to something I call Trump fatigue. I do think people are fatigued with what's going on here. And I think that depending on how the election goes, some people say, well, I've had enough. I've had enough of these kinds of tweets. I've had enough of, you know, one crisis or one outrage after another. So just because people don't support impeachment, I think Michael Iskoff said that, the impeachment stuff isn't going forward, you know, gangbusters. It's pretty much locked up. But that doesn't mean that people are not going to make a determination that they would like to see somebody else in this election cycle. But again, it all depends on who the Democratic candidate is. And I think if President Trump actually started focusing on the economy, he'd do better. But again, just because he gets off on the impeachment process doesn't mean he won't be impeached by the public on Election Day.
We're talking with Republican political analyst Sean Walsh. Sean, what's your sense of internally what's going on with the Republican members of the House and specifically the members of the two committees that have been the focal point of this? Are they deeply conflicted over this, disturbed by the president at the same time they're full-throatedly defending him?
Well, they are deeply disturbed, but the bottom line is there is a growing number of people in the Republican Party who believe that from day one of this election, not even before he took office, that many people in the country and many people in the mainstream media did not think that President Trump was a legitimate president, and they believe that every step of the way they've been trying to delegitimize his presidency. And so when people attack you, attack a member of your family, attack a member of your party, even though you may have problems with your aunt or your uncle, you generally tend to line up and defend them. And so with Republican members of Congress, if they're perceived by activist members of their party in their districts for not defending the president, they may not vote for them. And all these elections are so tight, it has real consequences for Republicans losing House seats and possibly Senate seats in this election cycle if they're not seen defending a guy who they believe is being overly and somewhat unfairly attacked.
Sean, great to talk with you. We appreciate it very much and look forward to speaking with you in the days to come.
Thank you, sir.
Sean Walsh, Republican political analyst, joining us on Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. We're going to continue by bringing onto the conversation legal scholar Deep Gulasekaram coming up in just a minute, but stay tuned. We're going to also rejoin the Senate Judiciary Committee as it continues with its debate over the amendments on the articles of impeachment against President Trump. They still haven't returned to their committee room. As soon as they do, we'll rejoin NPR for their live coverage. Back in a minute. Great to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. We just got the word that NPR will resume its live coverage at 11 o'clock, so we'll be returning to the network at the top of the hour following this abbreviated edition of Air Talk. During this time when the House Judiciary Committee is broken to do some votes, not on impeachment, but separate voting matters on the floor of the full House of Representatives, once they get back, probably grabbing a sandwich too, they'll sit down and do their further debate on the amendments on the articles of impeachment. Then sometime later today, we have no idea when, the committee takes its vote on the two articles of impeachment. Those are expected to be passed. They move to the full House of Representatives, where it is anticipated next week that the debate and the vote will be held on those articles of impeachment. Joining us now, legal scholar from Santa Clara Law, where he's professor who specializes in constitutional law, Pradeepan Gulasekaram. Professor Deep, good to have you with us again.
Thank you for having me.
So your thoughts about where we are now and is this a legal debate at all at this point? Or have we kind of moved past that into just process and arguments about what behavior was exhibited?
Well, I think that what you heard from the minority members of the committee is at least an attempt to make this a legal debate. You had several members speaking who brought up federal statutes on bribery, people talking about the elements needed to establish those sorts of crimes. And so certainly an attempt to talk about this in legalistic terms. But, you know, as most people who study this area will tell you, impeachment, while it might gain some legitimacy from looking to criminal statutes and legal procedure, is really a political move by the House that can be governed or can be informed and guided by the background legal structure. But it is a constitutional process.
And what do you anticipate will be central to the anticipated debate next week in the full House?
You know, I don't really know. I think in the full House, you might actually get a relitigation of many of the same themes that you're seeing here. I think some of the procedural moves that are available within the committee hearing context will not be available in the full House debate context, and so you may not get as many of those. But I think we'll start to hear the case that's going to be made for the president when it actually gets to the Senate.
All right. Your thoughts about these two articles and what they specifically embody, do you think this was the best way for Democrats to proceed with impeachment, or should they have gone for bribery or additional counts?
Well, you know, I think that this is ultimately a strategic decision by the Democratic leadership. Obviously, one of those decisions was to leave out the obstruction of justice charges that can come from the Mueller report, where it clearly outlined several instances in which the president ordered the firing of people who were the firing of the special counsel, the creation of a false written record, etc. Now, all of that could have been a charge left out, I think, because perhaps the decision was it's hard to explain that. Now, within the two charges that we have, you know, I think the obstruction of Congress charge here is the one that's going to be harder to sell to the American public as one that's an impeachable offense. The abuse of power, though, I think is one that sits firmly in the center of what impeachment is for. And I think even John, you and your other guests suggested that that's where, although it doesn't have a tie to a particular criminal charge, one can contemplate how it also includes aspects of bribery, right? And so bribery is when you try and give some or get something of value or give something of value in order to get something back from somebody. This abuse of power charge fundamentally has those same elements in it.
We're talking with Santa Clara law professor Deep Gulasekaram. He specializes in constitutional law. Where do you see this compared to the impeachment of Bill Clinton and Richard Nixon? Again, as we were talking earlier in the hour, both of those, you've got clearly defined crimes. In the case of Clinton, the majority of Americans not believing it rose to the level of removal from office or impeachment. The case of Richard Nixon, national consensus was on the opposite side, that he should go. How do you see it in terms of this impeachment?
So to me, the single most important connection that one can draw between prior impeachments is the connection to the Nixon impeachment, in that President Nixon at that time was attempting to gain an advantage in the election process. That is, he was fundamentally undermining the integrity of the popular vote in the election process as laid out in the Constitution. I think here there's a pattern of conduct, at least if you believe the testimony that's been given, thinking about what Professor Carlin said, what Professor Feldman and Gerhardt said, that this has that similar flavor, that this is about the integrity of an election, the invitation of a foreign power to manipulate aspects of that or to somehow undermine a political rival. I think that's a very key connection. It is certainly true that in both of those past elections, there was an underlying criminal charge that can be attached to the president's conduct. I'm not sure that, to me at least, is not the most important connection. It can certainly form the basis of granting greater legitimacy to the process in some people's eyes. On the other hand, if you look at President Clinton, despite the fact that there was a perjury charge, one that can be substantiated in a criminal court, I think most people, including the American public, thought that it was really not the best use of the impeachment power.
We're talking with Santa Clara law professor Deep Gulasekaram. In the case of the allegation that the president attempted to politically, personally benefit from the announcement of an investigation into the Bidens and Burisma by the Ukrainian government, you can make the argument that if the president's intent was to get that wasn't very competently pursued, that there wasn't exactly consistency in the messaging, in holding Ukrainians' feet to the fire over that, that there was sort of, if this was a high priority for President Trump, it was not particularly diligently pursued. Did that factor in at all to this as to the degree to which that sort of personal gain is pursued?
I think when you look at the defense being mounted, at least already in the hearing by members of the minority, you see them trying to paint the president as you just said, going after something that might be plausibly legitimate in terms of looking into anti-corruption charges, etc. That is, I think, why the articles of impeachment talk about a pattern of conduct, that story about the president, however inartfully, going after some sort of anti-corruption crusade really doesn't hold up, I think, when one looks at the entirety of the evidence and the pattern as overall over the matter of months, including the fact that I think what's difficult about this is that some of those underlying theories, for example, about Burisma, have been debunked, and specifically the theories of Ukrainian intervention in the 2016 election have been debunked. And so while it might be that the president believes in his heart of hearts that those are important things, they also don't withstand the general factual knowledge that we can all hopefully rely on.
Professor, good to talk with you again. Always a pleasure. We hope to speak with you soon.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. That's Professor Deep Gulasekaram of Santa Clara Law, constitutional law specialist. Thank you for joining us for an abbreviated Air Talk today. We anticipate that the Judiciary Committee will come back during the next hour. Nonetheless, NPR continues with its coverage in just 1 minute.